Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. Out here on the West Coast, it's still the morning. So we'll start like we did last week with a little bit of meditation and then setting our motivation. So breathe normally and naturally. Pay attention to your breath. If distractions arise, just note them, but don't make a story out of them. And instead, come home to your breath. So we'll sit quietly for a few minutes so that that can occur. And let's set our motivation now. So we and everybody else wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. Everybody is exactly the same in that respect. And yet, due to our ignorance, it's as if we're running towards the causes of suffering. We're so eager to do things under the influence of ignorance, anger, and attachment. So realizing that our own and others' minds are captivated by these wrong views, these disturbing emotions, let's rejoice that we have the opportunity to meet the Buddha's teachings, to hear them and put them into practice. And so let's make a determination to use this opportunity wisely. And in particular, to use it with the long-term motivation of bodhicitta. In other words, the long-term motivation to become a fully enlightened Buddha in order to have the compassion, wisdom, and skillful means necessary to be of the greatest benefit to each and every living being. So generate that motivation for our being together and sharing the Dharma in the next hour. Okay. So, Randy, are there some questions from last week? Okay. So, I think a lot of people know what Bob's talking about. So, there's an adrenaline rush, and along with it, anger. And there's a certain feeling of power, and there's a buzz. We get a hit from it, okay? We get a big adrenaline hit. And so he's asking what to do how do we handle that? Especially, and I think that's very insightful, that he noted that there's kind of an addiction to getting that hit. Okay? And so I think that's really something to look at, because, you know, our body and mind are interdependent. I think actually what happens is that first we're generating what we call wrong attention. We're paying attention to the object in an incorrect way, so we're making up a story about it. On the basis of that, anger arises, but anger's really small at the beginning. Then the hormones chip in. Okay? And at the same time the hormones are chipping in, the anger is getting bigger. Yeah? And so once the hormones are there, they're not going to, you know, dissipate immediately. Okay? So I think some things that are good to do is, okay, first of all, notice when the mind is making up stories. Okay, try and catch it at the level of the story and realize that the story we're making up is not accurate. And this is where a lot of the meditations that Shantideva taught in his Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, Chapter 6, where they're very helpful, because we reframe the event and see it in a different way. So if we're able to catch it on the level of the story and remind ourselves that the story doesn't make sense, then the hormones don't have quite a, you know, the adrenaline doesn't, you know, get, have the opportunity to get so active. One thing, though, when the adrenaline is active, what I find that I need to do is I really need to remove myself from the situation, because otherwise I'm very likely to say or do something that I'm going to regret later. So, you know, because the anger is pretty intense by the time the body is has chipped in. Another thing that's interesting to do is if you can remove yourself from the situation, or and just sit down and feel the sensations in your body, feel what is going on. In other words, instead of paying attention to the storyline about how I'm right and they're wrong, pay attention to, you know, what it feels like in your body to be angry. You know, some of us get the feeling in our stomach, some people in our jaw, some people, the blood vessels get swollen, the heart is pumping, the face gets red, the palms sweat. You know, there's a number of physical symptoms that are coming, and it can be very interesting to pay attention to those instead of following the story and feeding the anger. Because if we pay attention to the physical symptoms, then naturally after a while they're going to subside, because things are impermanent, they don't last forever. But Bob's particular question about, you know, the addiction to that physical feeling, you know, when you're sitting there quietly and, you know, the adrenaline's going and, you know, you're experiencing that, I'm just watching the physical sensation. Also ask yourself, what about this sensation is pleasurable? And I think this is a really interesting question, because when we don't examine, we think that there's a lot of pleasure in this feeling of power and the physical sensations that accompany it. But when we really sit there and watch what's going on in the body and say, what about this feeling, even on a physical level, is pleasurable? It's really difficult, you know, because I know for myself, when I sit down and I'm just aware of the physical feeling, actually it's a very uncomfortable feeling. It's not pleasurable. There's nothing there to be addicted to, because it's uncomfortable. Okay? So when I see that, you know, and when you can see that again and again and again, then instead of saying, oh, I'm getting a buzz off the adrenaline, you're going, oh, I'm suffering because of the adrenaline. You know, I don't want to be in this state. And so then that helps us to not feed into the anger that brings it on.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, so this is a good question I've heard asked many times. Can anger cause disease such as cancer? You know, I hear that kind of batted around in New Age circles, this kind of thing of, you know, well, you caused your own cancer by being angry. I don't think that's correct, you know, and I also don't think it's very compassionate. You know, I don't think, you know, we deliberately cause ourselves a disease like that. I think when we have diseases, they're often results of karma we created in a previous life. So perhaps that karma we created was created under the influence of anger. So maybe in a previous life, you know, we did something that harmed others physically because our mind was overpowered by anger. But I don't think it's very compassionate to say in this life we cause our own cancer by being angry. I don't think that's exactly correct. My feeling is more that it's a karmic cause. And of course, like I said, that karmic cause could have something to do with anger. Now, having said that, I think that the state of our mind does influence our ability to heal. Okay, so the disease or the illness or the injury may come about due to cancer, but the speed at which we heal is influenced by our present state of mind, you know. And so if our state of mind is one that is in a lot of turmoil, that if we're upset and we're angry and we're belligerent and we want revenge, then that upset state of mind is taking a lot of energy away that could be used to heal the body, you know, because I can really see it in myself. You know, when I'm upset, there's a lot of energy going into turning around in my head, blah, 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 you know, and that energy can't go to healing the body. And the body gets involved in all of that negative mental energy because, you know, the body then starts feeling ill at ease. And so that can really delay healing. Whereas I feel if somebody makes an attempt to develop loving kindness and to feel and experience the kindness that others show them and really have a sense of gratitude and appreciation for that, if they have that, then that makes their own mind very happy. When the mind is happy, the body is more peaceful. When the body is more peaceful, then it the natural healing processes can occur more easily. Okay? So I think there is that relationship, but I don't think it's correct to say that somebody's anger caused their disease. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Jill is saying that she understands the difference about making the space between the angry thought and the angry action. And she's asking, how do you cultivate that space and what techniques do you use in that space to kind of calm yourself down? You know, this gets asked a lot, and you know, sometimes I think people are looking for something that they can do right in that moment without having done any kind of practice before. And that's kind of like going in to take your driver's ed test without having ever driven a car. You know, you're not going to have much success. So it's this whole thing about practicing the meditations on anger when we are in this, you know, our own home, when we're not right there in front of the person who's making us angry. Because we, you know, as with any skill, it needs a lot of practice. We need to do it and practice it, not in a stressful situation, but repeatedly in a situation where we can really work through it and get to the correct conclusion in our meditations. So what I recommend in this regard is not just to think about the antidotes to anger in an intellectual way. In other words, you don't just take out the book Working with Anger and say, okay, step one is this, step two is this, step three is this, blah, 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 like you're giving some kind of lecture to yourself. Don't do that in your meditation. But rather, think of a situation that angered you in the past, where you got angry. Remember that situation. Remember how you felt. Remember how you thought. Okay? Really bring that situation to mind. And then practice the new way of thinking according to these thought transformation teachings. Okay? So you have a real situation that you've actually experienced, but you're not in the middle of it at that very moment with somebody in front of you. But you do have some residual resentment and anger and grudge holding going on there. You know, so there is some feeling going on. And by remembering the techniques to practice in that situation and practicing them, then you can watch your resentment and, you know, grudge decrease in energy. And that's, you know, you're doing that by the force of your meditation, and you repeatedly do that over a period of time to familiarize yourself with those techniques. Okay, so I hope you know, that you're getting what you say. I can't see you to see how you're reacting, but the difficulty with not having the person in front of you. But it's really important to practice it when we're alone. And, you know, let's face it, we have a whole wealth of things that we're still holding on to anger in relation to. You know, I mean, we still have a bunch of stuff that happened yesterday, happened 10 years ago, happened whenever, you know, where we're still holding on, that person didn't, how could they dare do, you know, we still have it all going on. And so we call those situations to mind and then practice the techniques with those situations in our meditation. And we do this repeatedly so that we get really familiar with the new way of looking at things. Because of that familiarity, when that familiarity is cultivated over a long period of time, then when you're in the actual situation, you can remember it and you can put it into practice, and you can retrain your mind in that situation. Okay. But it takes practice beforehand. And, you know, one of our big troubles is, you know, we want instant success, instant, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, it really takes practice. And the whole path to enlightenment, it takes practice, it takes time, it takes repetition. And I think this is one of the really most important things that people who come from a push-button instant gratification society need to realize when we're practicing a spiritual path.